climbing COVID infections, a new county mayor, and the call for more local rules. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. COVID cases keep increasing across South Florida. There are no plans by Miami-Dade's new mayor for restrictions to return.
What I'm focusing on is enforcement of the laws that we have on the books, including the curfew.
Mayor Daniela Levine Cava followed through with her campaign promise to appoint a chief medical officer. What are his responsibilities? Meantime, four South Florida city mayors want a statewide mask mandate. The only Broward County city mayor in the group will join us this hour. And Miami-Dade College gets a new president. She takes over amid the pandemic and declining enrollment. All ahead on the South Florida Roundup, made possible by Willie the Bee Man, bee removal specialist. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting public radio. The charts for COVID-19 are pointing higher across South Florida. New cases, emergency room visits by patients with COVID-like symptoms, and hospitalizations are higher than a week ago. It's not the summer surge the region experienced, but the COVID infection continues spreading to more and more people as Thanksgiving approaches. Mask rules remain in place, though they cannot be enforced with fines. Restaurants, bars, stores, schools all remain open as testing demand increases across the region. This week, a small group of local mayors asked Governor Ron DeSantis to put in place a statewide mask mandate. We'll talk with one of the local mayors making that call coming up. Do you think there should be a statewide mask requirement? Do you know the rules in your area? Should people be fined for not wearing masks in public? What should be the response as the virus keeps spreading here in South Florida? Your phone calls and tweets in a moment, but dial us up now, 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. Daniela Levine Cava officially became the new Miami-Dade County Mayor on Tuesday. We spoke with her Friday morning. Madam Mayor, welcome to WLRN. Should the county reinstitute some restrictions?
At the current time, I have signed the orders that had been previously prepared by Mayor Jimenez, so I have not made any immediate changes. But what I am doing differently is making sure that our cities, our medical institutions, our businesses are all on board and cooperating with the orders. So for me, that's the first order of the day, that we speak with one voice, and we move forward to make sure that the public understands the critical nature. The cases are going up, as you say, not as steeply as they might if we take the precautions. So it is on us to do everything that we must, the masking, the distancing, the disinfecting and washing, the testing, tracing, and isolation.
Those protocols were... local governments not cooperating with those in past weeks?
Well, there's some question about enforcement of the curfew. So that is something that I'm discussing with all the cities to make sure we are all following through on that curfew, which after all was upheld by the courts. You know, our Miami-Dade County Police Department is working in cooperation with city policing, and I think has worked well. And it's just, look, here's the deal. We're going into the holidays. Thanksgiving is a time that people get together. They might let their guards and their masks down. It's not the time to do so. We need to think of this holiday in a new way. We need to eat outdoors, have fewer people, maintain our distance, use a mask when we're not eating, etc. Just very, very critical that we're all on board with the same message.
Chicago, Oregon, Minnesota, Los Angeles, all these locations are reinstituting restrictions like closing movie theaters and fitness centers, gyms, indoor drinking limitations, capacity limitations, returning to retail stores just ahead of the holiday shopping season. Are any of these options open to you as mayor of Miami-Dade County?
We are doing what we can within the framework of the state law. You may have seen that a group of city mayors, and I do stand with them, urged the governor to impose a uniform masking law. At the current time, we do have the masking requirement, but we cannot actually collect fines for failure to cooperate. We can levy the fines and collect them at a later time when restrictions are lifted at the state. So that's the first thing that has definitely been determined to be the most successful, the masking, and that is where we're focusing.
So no particular interest right now on attempting to put restrictions on capacity of retail stores, for instance, or additional capacity limitations on bars or restaurants or other businesses?
What I'm focusing on is enforcement of the laws that we have on the books, including the curfew. I do believe that the curfew is something that helps us for the hours when people might be less careful, when it might be harder to enforce the social distancing and the masking rules. That's consistent with what medical experts are saying. I discussed that as well with Jackson. So we're very much focused on all speaking with one voice, utilizing the tools that are at our disposal. I believe that's the very best way to proceed at this time.
On your first day as Miami-Dade County Mayor, you appointed the county's first chief medical officer. You pledged to do that during the campaign. That was among your first official acts this week. Dr. Peter Page is the chief physician executive and chief clinical officer at Jackson. What are his duties as the county's chief medical officer?
He will be my constant advisor. He will help us to interpret the data and the trends from locally and around the country. He will speak with the other medical officers at the other hospitals. In fact, we have a call scheduled next week. He will speak with the chief medical officers at the cruise lines, for example, that have come into place. He'll talk with the mayors, as well as with our county officials and our business community. So his job will not be to be the only person with knowledge, but to work with the other experts, the medical experts who have been involved, to make sure that we are all speaking with one voice and communicating that effectively to the public.
Has there been disagreement in the health advisory groups that have been put together for various local agencies? I'm thinking the school district has a health advisory group. I know former Mayor Jimenez had an advisory group. Had there been disagreement? Was there friction?
I'm not aware of friction per se, but I think it's hard for people to just know what's the go-to source. And this way, with everybody on board, the idea is that it will be very simple. There'll be no confusion. And basically, we're looking for clarity so that nobody can claim ignorance, you know, lack of knowledge, right, of the laws. So we are really very hopeful that Dr. Page, with his expertise, with his very excellent communication and relationship skills, will be the person to help bring us all together.
Will he make recommendations in this communication and advisory role?
Yes, he will. Absolutely. And that's where I'll be in constant communication to make sure that I'm informed as to the reasons for recommendations. And of course, you know, we'll discuss them. You know, all of this is about communication. That is the critical piece in any crisis.
What weight will his recommendations have, and what ability as the chief executive of the county will you have to follow those recommendations with or without county commission approval?
Well, we are still in a state of emergency. I still have the ability to create executive orders, and I will not hesitate to do so if needed. But as I've said, I've reviewed the current ones, and I find them to be appropriate and sufficient. And that's what we're moving forward until such time as we get additional indications or recommendations.
Do you have the legal capability as the Miami-Dade County Mayor to impose restrictions, additional restrictions, if you decide or if Dr. Page recommends them and you agree?
Yes, I do. And of course, consistent with state laws. So we'd have to examine that. But for example, at the current time, we are issuing citations, not able to collect fines for some violations, but we do issue citations with the idea that in the future, when it's possible, that those citations might be turned into actual collection of fines. And we also have the ability to close an establishment not following the rules. Of course, we try to avoid that. You know, there have been a very few cases, as I understand it, where that's been necessary.
The governor's directive from late September, when he announced a phase three for the state, did prohibit local governments from putting restrictions in that would close local industries, somehow restrict business by 100%, didn't it?
Yes, so exactly. So we have the curfew, which is in effect, and that's an area where we can enforce violation of the curfew.
You have said that Dr. Page, as the chief medical officer of the county, will, quote, ensure our pandemic response is driven by data and science and not politics. What data do you think he is going to use to inform his advisory role and his recommendations?
Well, we're all watching the same statistics, right? We know what the positivity rate is, the hospitalization, the critical care beds, these things we know. In addition, we're learning all the time. New research is being conducted. For example, I was on the phone yesterday with Drs. Fauci and Birx, which was very wonderful to have that opportunity as mayor of the county. They were talking about the fact that we have this high rate of positivity for people coming to the hospitals, not for COVID, right? People showing up for other conditions, being tested and found to be positive, which indicates the high degree of community spread. So we were talking about, again, something that I already knew, but to confirm that you do not have to be symptomatic to be contagious. So, you know, this just confirms for us that the disease is rampant in our community. And it is really critical that we assume that we're being exposed and take all the proper precautions. So that's the kind of information that we would want to be clearly communicated. And we'll be working on ways to clearly and concisely get the message out.
As you spoke with those two members of the president's coronavirus task force, did they give you any hint of the trajectory of infections in Miami-Dade County, given their national perspective? And did they provide any context for recommendations that may be coming for local institutions?
Well, yes, they were very knowledgeable about our local situation, not only in the present, but in the past. And obviously, they've been part of conversations that I've not been part of for many months. They recognized that in the prior spike, the county had done a good job of targeting the areas of high positivity rates with our surge teams, that we'd been effective in our measures. And you know, let's remember that last period, we still had federal dollars available to assist the businesses that were affected. And, you know, we're running out of the CARES Act dollars. So I'm very, very hopeful that there'll be another tranche of funds to assist us since, you know, the vaccine is on the horizon. We're so grateful for that, but we're not out of the woods. So they said basically to stay the course. This is the time to have a very consistent following of all of the tools in our toolbox so that we can keep the curve down and not go into the kind of crisis that we had previously.
So you've been able to speak and hear from Dr. Fauci, Dr. Birx from a national perspective. Have you spoken with Governor DeSantis since you have taken the reins in Miami-Dade County?
I did speak to his representative in South Florida, and I'm hopeful we're setting up a call soon. I did speak with Jared Moskowitz, the head of emergency management for the state. That was a very positive call. He assured us he's here and the governor is here to assist us. And for example, we have access to hotel rooms for isolation, which is an important part of the puzzle. And should we need additional rooms, those would be available to us.
So you're still trying to set up a meeting with the governor?
I'm very much looking forward to speaking with Governor DeSantis.
The governor this week came out and spoke about the coronavirus in Florida in the context of the potential vaccine or vaccines and distribution of those vaccines if and when they receive FDA approval. Jackson will be among the first hospitals to store any COVID-19 vaccine. What are the preparations at the state level that you can share with us?
Well, I have spoken to Carlos Magoya,
the CEO of Jackson.
Correct. And he and I are very excited about this. It's anticipated that the first batch will be targeted for our frontline workers. So we need to be aware that those who protect us must be protected first. So we're going to have the vaccine administered to the workers at the hospitals that are serving COVID patients and other frontline workers. After that, it will be the most vulnerable populations. So it will take a few months before the vaccine is available to the general public.
You speak about coordination and communication being key points for you appointing the county's first chief medical officer. But yet you have not had the opportunity to speak with Governor DeSantis, who this week did meet with FDA and CDC and Health and Human Services officials in Washington, D.C., and came back to Florida to talk about how a vaccine will be distributed in Florida if and when it gets FDA approval. Is there clear communication lines between South Florida and the governor as it relates to this infection and the response?
You know, I'm on day four of my term as mayor, so I think everybody needs to, you know, just be a little patient. I'm very excited to step up in this role. Mayor Jimenez had a very detailed team working on these issues. They were in regular communication and still are with the governor's chief of staff. And simply, we're talking about an opportunity for me to speak one-on-one with the governor, which I feel confident will happen in the near future.
Former Mayor Jimenez is now Congressman-elect Jimenez, who will be going to Washington to become part of the new Congress in early January. You mentioned the CARES Act money, the federal stimulus dollars that were approved back in the springtime, and there has been a raging debate about another round of stimulus, and that debate has been a victim of gridlock in Washington between the House, democratically controlled House, and the Republican Senate. Have you spoken with the former mayor about how he will approach any potential new round of federal stimulus spending?
So far, Congressman Jimenez and I have pledged to work together. He participated in my installation virtually from D.C. and the ceremonial passing of the pen, and which I've used, by the way, to sign to continue the executive orders. I know that he is going to continue to focus on the needs of our community, and clearly he understands the importance of federal funds. I did have the opportunity to speak to Senator Rubio this week, who also assured me that he was very interested to help to bring additional dollars. So I'm encouraged by that. And of course, our delegation will work hard to make sure that happens as soon as they get their things together in Washington and they can move forward.
One part of federal support that's been so important here, not the CARES Act funding per se, but the federal support for testing centers. What's needed for testing centers? What are they experiencing? What are you hearing back in terms of a spike in demand and the ability to have the supply for those tests in the weeks ahead?
Exactly. So with the increase in cases, there is an increased demand for testing. Fortunately, we do have a robust testing capacity, which grew over the months. So people are now lining up, longer waits, but still very manageable. And of course, the test results coming back within a day or two, which is certainly better than what we had before. So there's been improvements in the whole processing. We do want to encourage everybody, if they feel they've been exposed, they do need to test. That is the most critical part of the contact tracing, and also to confirm someone's own, the transmission.
Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine Cava. She made history this week, becoming the first woman mayor of Miami-Dade County. It was an historic week for women leaders across the region. We'll have more on that later on in the program. But coming up first, the local call to make masks mandatory across the state. Your thoughts, 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576, or on Twitter, at WLRN, as the South Florida Roundup continues in a moment. We're back on the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening and supporting public media. There's no statewide mandate to wear masks in Florida. It is one of a little bit more than a dozen states that do not have a statewide mask rule. Governor Ron DeSantis has resisted putting one in place, and in September, he banned local governments from being able to collect fines from people who violate local mask requirements. This week, five local mayors, including one in Broward County, called on the governor to institute a statewide mask mandate. So how about it where you live here in South Florida? Are you required to wear a mask? Do you know the rules? What about where you go to work, where you go to shop, where the kids go to school, or where you pick up your grandkids or nieces or nephews? 800-743-WLRN, a mask mandate. Up next here on the South Florida Roundup, your phone calls live on this Friday at 800-743-9576. Sunrise Mayor Mike Ryan was that Broward County mayor making that call to Governor Ron DeSantis this week. Mayor Ryan, welcome back to the Roundup. Nice to have you again.
Nice to be back.
So what do you want the governor to do exactly?
Well, I want to first say that while there were five mayors, we represent a cross-section across the state of mayors and commissioners who are really asking for a better mitigation strategy. Certainly, the mask mandate statewide is important, both as a public health statement and to allow in the local community a little more authority to enforce it. But we also need to go back to where we were before September 25th, when local governments, counties, and local governments could enact mitigation strategies that we could enforce. And they were very effective.
Yeah, I want to ask you about those, Mayor Ryan, because those prior to that late September date, that was when the governor put phase three into play for the state of Florida and prohibited local governments from essentially closing any industries in South Florida, and also prohibited local governments from collecting fines for the violation of local mask mandates. Why aren't the local decisions enough right now in terms of the masks alone?
That, you know, the real issue is that in a pandemic, in a public health catastrophe, a patchwork of public health policy is neither effective or productive. In fact, it's counterproductive. And what we saw in the early stages in April was, for instance, in Sunrise, we closed restaurants except for takeout and delivery. But my neighboring cities did not. And what we saw for a period of time until the state enacted it was that people would just go across the street and they would be packed into bars and restaurants. This is the same problem we face as local governments. The governor's order in September makes it virtually impossible for us to implement capacity restrictions. And it really is at a time when we can take full advantage of our great weather and move outdoors, and we can't do the things we know we need to do.
Would you like to institute capacity restrictions, bring back restrictions on restaurant or bar capacity or retail shop capacity in Sunrise now, Mayor Ryan?
Here's what I would like, and I cannot do it just in Sunrise. Neither our commission nor our business community would do that. It is unfair to ask certain business to sacrifice if we're not going to do collective sacrifice. But what I would say is at the county level and in the tri-county area, we need to have the flexibility, not necessarily as a restriction, but it's to follow the science and data and reduce the capacity indoors and move everyone as much as possible outdoors and maintain that capacity in a different way. We are blessed that we're not Philadelphia or New York or other parts of the country where we have no choices. We have choices.
Yeah, I hear you. Right. I mean, the humidity we have, you don't have to shovel. So you get to sit outside in it, certainly. But this idea, I guess you have choices, but the restaurants or the bars or the retail outlets may not have choices. They may not have the space to go outside to be able to do 100% replacement of their indoor dining with dining on a back patio or a parking lot.
Yeah, that there's no question. It's challenging. We've had to face that locally. But, you know, this is not a binary choice. Either we let this rage throughout the community and more people die and get long-term illness, or we shut down the economy. We have to recognize if we don't take steps where we're at 8 and 9%, the counties are in virtual parity, and the hospitalizations are increasing. If we don't do things now, it's going to be even more catastrophic for our businesses as we see what's happening around the country.
Mayor Ryan, hold on with us here. Sunrise Mayor Mike Ryan is with us from Broward County talking about Mayor Ryan and a quartet of other mayors in South Florida asking for a statewide mask mandate from Governor Ron DeSantis. 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Michelle in Hollywood on line three. Go ahead, hi. Michelle, you're on the radio.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm just appalled at the fact that we cannot be more disciplined in the United States in regards to such serious matters. We are a population where a lot of us, I don't know how many, but I'm sure more than the ones that do not want to wear masks. We are here wearing masks so that we can protect ourselves, so that we can protect others. And here, DeSantis, who's in bed with the president, how can he not put a mandate or a law so that people can now wear masks and be fined if they don't wear them?
Michelle, thank you for putting voice to that concern. I hope you and your family will have a happy and healthy Thanksgiving there in Hollywood. Mayor Ryan, you hear there from Michelle that concern, and what you hear from the governor is he will say, if you want to wear a mask, wear a mask. The governor himself wears masks occasionally. He says you're not banned from wearing a mask. If you feel that you're protected, go ahead and do it. Isn't that enough?
Well, I think as Michelle points out that, you know, if your only tool in the toolbox is to rely on personal responsibility, we know that fails. We've seen it through crowded beaches at spring break, and we're going to see it this upcoming weekend. We have flu season, Thanksgiving, colleges are out, holidays are coming up, people are coming here from hot spots from all over the country. And as Michelle points out, there are too many people, some of whom are just against masks, but when you see a crowded restaurant or a crowded bar, that's all foreseeable. These businesses are struggling. As you pointed out in the last segment, the money has not flowed to Main Street the way it needed to if we're going to ask for sacrifice. But we cannot rely exclusively on personal responsibility in a pandemic. It just doesn't work.
Should Broward County make changes to its curfew?
So in Broward County, they did not follow the curfew model that Miami-Dade did.
Right.
And the mayor pointed out that the Court of Appeals upheld that. In Broward, they have a capacity restriction on mm-hmm. restaurants. We couldn't go below the 50%. And there's some other matters. But, you know, the reality of what we're seeing is it's so difficult for us to enforce throughout the county. We're going to see it over the next couple of weeks. You're going to see images in certain corridors of this county that are popular for late night. So curfew is one strategy. I don't think that gets us there when, you know, if you have no capacity restrictions before the curfew. And capacity restrictions are fine, but they're not far enough in light of what we're seeing in terms of community spread.
So not far enough. So what is far enough in your estimation for your constituents in Sunrise?
So, you know, one of the things I'll come back to again, we can't really do anything in the city. No single municipal mayor can do anything at this stage because it's categorically unfair to walk across the street. What we need to do is increase, and again, this is really important from the mayor's perspective. Whatever is working in the other parts of the state, we're not asking to change that. We just want local governments to be able to turn on and off the spigot of these mitigation strategies so we can get below the 5%.
But you do want a statewide mask mandate, though. You want that in place across borders. Yeah.
Correct. Absolutely. There's no question. And we want testing restored throughout the state. Right. Those testing facilities have been dialed back, and we need to increase contact tracing. But when it comes to the mitigation strategies, the counties can do this, and we've done it successfully. Yeah. And we do need to be addressing capacity further.
Mayor Ryan, we got to leave it there. The Sunrise Mayor, Mike Ryan, is with us here on the South Florida Roundup. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, Mayor Ryan. Nice to have you again.
Thank you for bringing this forward.
Lots more to come on the South Florida Roundup. We're back on the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. Madeline Pumariega is returning to South Florida amid a pandemic and a deep jobs recession. She will be at the center of both as the incoming president of Miami-Dade College, the largest college in the country by enrollment. But the number of students has been falling and college spending has come under pressure. Pumariega is from Hialeah and attended and taught at Miami-Dade College before leading its downtown campus almost a decade ago. She's been the boss at Tallahassee Community College for a little over a year. She takes over Miami-Dade College in January. We spoke with her Friday morning. Welcome to WLRN. With COVID infections climbing in Miami-Dade County, will the college have to reassess holding in-person classes?
I think so. I think that we've got to continue to follow the science and listen to the experts and working together with faculty and making sure that the priority is that we keep our faculty, our students safe, and that we also help the community stay safe. And so we'll take a deep dive at what we're offering in terms of face-to-face with technology now and new instructional modalities. We've got much more flexibility with being able to not just offer our traditional online offerings, but also hybrid courses, which, you know, allow for smaller class sizes if there is a face-to-face session, but especially with Zoom and Canvas and the learning management systems that we can still make teaching and learning interactive, but not necessarily do we have to have that close contact.
I think maybe everybody's familiar with Zoom. Canvas is an online learning software that the college uses, many colleges use.
Correct.
Yeah. Let me ask, the college's COVID plan, which is in place now as you come in and take over as president, has limited in-person teaching. That's the current practice. It rests on a 14-day positivity rate of 10% and trending down. That was in the plan when it was put in place back in September. As the trend is increasing, could the college retreat from any in-person teaching?
You know, I think we're going to have to work together with the mayor and just the medical experts. And I think whatever the situation on the ground warrants, I think the college has to be in a position to be able to make those adjustments as we did in March. And if we think about not just at Miami-Dade College, but, you know, at Tallahassee Community College, we had to move on a dime and immediately shift to an online format. And in the summer, you know, most colleges were online, really limited face-to-face. The fall opened up a little bit more of possibility. And if coming into the spring term that kicks off in January, the medical community, along with the experts, think we've got to make yet one more adjustment. The college needs to be ready, and certainly I will be ready to go.
So it's not off the table that it could retreat to all online if the science points you in that direction?
Yeah, if the pandemic conditions in the community warrant that. Right now, we're monitoring that. We're seeing exactly what you're seeing in terms of the cases rising. And we'll listen to, again, the medical experts, make sure we're not contributing to overwhelming the hospitals and medical care, but at the same time, trying to balance the educational needs of our students. And so many of our students that are first-generation college students, Pell Grant students, which are low-income students, they really do benefit from the interaction. They benefit from the much more traditional type educational format. So it's that fine balance of meeting the needs of the students while meeting the needs of the community in terms of going through a pandemic.
What are some of the inputs in the criteria that you'll be looking at and being advised on as we approach the spring semester beginning in January after the winter holidays? As you're looking at that science and data in the community, what are some of the trigger points you'll be looking at to make that decision, in person, hybrid, or online?
Positivity rate. I think the experts will point to that. That seems to be one of those indicators that is consistent and gives us some good predictive analytics. I'm not the expert in hospitalizations, but I'm sure, you know, working with the hospital CEOs in the area. That's another indicator that they also look at. But the good news is that vaccines are on the way. If we can just do what the experts say, the face coverings have to be mandatory. You know, students and have to wear them, washing hands and social distancing. And I think that's really important that we execute on that. It might be in the plan, but making sure that we do implement that at 100% when anyone is on any one of our campuses.
As students and faculty came back to campus in the fall, the college struck a memorandum of understanding with faculty, allowing for some faculty members, those older than 65, those with underlying health conditions, for instance, to teach remotely. As you come into the position as president of Miami-Dade College, do you continue to expect to have that memorandum in place?
Yes, we did it also at Tallahassee Community College. I led our Restart Reimagine campaign, which was really the task force that put in place our policies and practices at TCC. And we did that as well. So I would expect that that would continue at Miami-Dade College. I'll hit the ground running in January. I'm still in that transitional period and do expect to meet with Dr. Montoya, who's been serving as the interim president, and I know was critical on developing the plan.
How about any aspirations for on-campus testing?
You know, in that area, I think that we've got to look at what the county measures are in terms of testing sites. You know, we made a decision at TCC that we would partner with Tallahassee Memorial Hospital, FSU, and FAMU. I'd have to really sit down, talk to the mayor, talk to the medical experts and see if it makes sense for us to be a testing site or if it makes more sense for us to be a partner with a testing site.
The new president of the Florida State Senate this week said that tuition at Florida universities may have to increase to make up for a drop in state revenues. You're in Tallahassee now. You've been operating the Tallahassee College for a number of years. Is tuition at state colleges like Miami-Dade College and the college you lead now safe from possible increases?
I would hope so. I think that we're going through the toughest economic conditions, and families are facing real hard decisions. If we're going to be a partner with the community and trying to reskill, upskill those who've lost their jobs, keep students in college, while I understand we may see some shortfall from state funding, we have to be really careful about passing that over to families that right now are hurting. And so I would look at all other kinds of measures to hold steady on tuition increases on students. Again, that is a direct impact on families, and especially our middle income families that have been hurt tremendously by, you know, COVID-19 and unemployment. And so I would say that at last resort, I would, you know, consider that. I think that access and affordability go hand in hand, and we're the community's college, and this is the time that the community needs us.
As you hear the incoming Senate president's comments about university tuition, there's a difference in Florida, as you know, between Florida universities and Florida state colleges. Do you assume that the state college tuition is off the table in terms of being increased?
Not sure. By his comments, it seemed to be university, the 12 state universities. I think the 28 colleges, again, we are the community's colleges. We're those workforce engines. We typically attract really the students that are low-income students in the community that need the financial assistance. So I'm not sure how we balance the priority of the financial impact along with also trying to stabilize our enrollment and attracting students to come back to college, that this is the time to finish their degree. And this is the time to get the credentials and be prepared. So as the economy recovers, they have the opportunity to compete for a job.
Yeah, I want to ask you about enrollment and the economy in a moment. The state has asked state institutions to cut 6% from their budgets as state government looks at revenue shortfall in the next fiscal year. For Miami-Dade College, that's about $11 million. Where could that come from?
I think we have to look at recurring costs. I can tell you that at Tallahassee in, you know, during my time there and with my leadership, we did readjust the budget in the June for a 10%. And so when the 6% holdback came in, we had already planned by, you know, holding positions, not refilling the positions, certainly a travel moratorium. We're not traveling right now. There's conferences that aren't happening. Those are ways to look at it. There's a lot of cost saving measures that we can be strategic about without doing across the board cuts that have an impact on teaching and learning and student success. But I think, you know, three strategies really is freezing those positions, only hiring essential personnel that are needed, looking at travel cost, and then looking at just the cost that when you have 90% of your courses face-to-face, there's a cost of doing business on campus that right now there's some natural savings when you don't have everyone on campus.
How much is that balanced against the additional personal protective equipment and, you know, deep cleaning and other types of supplies that the pandemic has required from the college?
I think it balances out. I think, you know, there are places that the college had to make decisions to prioritize. There's two areas that this is the time that you invest. That's the personal protection equipment, as you discussed, and also technology, when you're relying on technology. And so those are two areas that probably expenditures went up. But there's, you know, five more areas that we could have, we can manage expenditures, part-time staff, other areas.
Enrollment is down about 12% in the past year at Miami-Dade College. It's a steeper decline than most other state colleges throughout the state. Why do you think that is?
Hard for me to diagnose it from a distance. I think that, you know, a lot of it has to do with one, you got to really just look at the data. What does the data say in terms of how many high school seniors did enroll? Was the loss from students, the pipeline of high school students who might have, you know, just said, I'm going to wait this fall term? Is you have to look and, you know, with student surveys, students that didn't come back, did they feel that they would get the same support and online? At TCC, I think we really went out to the students and did a lot of surveys. And I think that's why we're down just about 4%. And we also introduced the synchronous live modality. And that helps students, again, interact with faculty and other students. I know that a lot of our students, again, that are first generation students, low income students, they're intimidated by just being online. And so I think that impacts enrollment. And I also, from just my personal experience, you know, talking to colleagues across the state, a lot of students, their life in terms of their schedule changed. If they didn't lose their job, their hours have changed, or they needed to be available when they were called to work. Many of our students, Miami-Dade College and across our state colleges, work while they study and have the priority to help their families. And I think that's also another part. And then I would say the last aspect is that we have a lot of returning adults that make up our enrollment at Miami-Dade College, along with other colleges. And they are caring for their kids. They're serving as teachers as well. And so, you know, when you have a summer like that, it's hard to think about how am I going to go back to college in the fall when there's so many competing priorities.
Is there a significant change in the enrollment projections for the spring semester that you have seen as you've gone through this hiring process?
I understand from, you know, Dr. Montoya that the numbers seem to be much better, that the students that are there now are re-enrolling. And so I think we'll have to do some strategies to make sure that we can retain the students that are currently enrolled and reclaim the students that may not have enrolled in the fall and reassure them to come back. This is the time to invest in your education and absolutely recruit new students that may have just opted out of college this fall to start up in the spring.
You served as president of the college's Wolfson campus in downtown Miami for 2 years, beginning in 2011 as the region was recovering from the Great Recession and the housing collapse. I'm wondering what from that experience is informing your leadership as the region here recovers from a much different economic recession?
Workforce alignment. I think that sitting with business leaders, with Career Source, and where are the jobs going to be? I think that the you know, when we think about the future work and the future of work, we thought we probably had a little bit of a longer runway around innovation and automation and all of that. I think it's here and it's on our lap now. And I'm going to rely on business leaders that do have the jobs that are coming available to make sure that the college aligns our offerings to the talent that they need and align our programs into jobs. I think that helped the recession and that helped the recovery. And I think that's the right recipe. When we think about 11.6 million jobs were recovered after the last economic recession, 11.3 million went to individuals that had some college, that had credentials beyond high school. And I think that should be an area that we point to the importance of investing at the state level in our colleges like Miami-Dade College, and then also making sure that we're communicating to the community that this is the time you upskill, you level up and you finish that degree, because you'll be in a very competitive job market and those credentials will help you secure the job.
Speaking with incoming Miami-Dade College President Madeline Pumariega, she is one of a trio of women who made history this week in South Florida. Daniela Levine Cava became the first woman mayor of Miami-Dade County, and Kim Ang became the first woman to lead a Major League Baseball team when she was introduced as the new general manager of the Miami Marlins. And Pumariega is the first woman to be president of Miami-Dade College.
I know, what a special time, right? In Miami, what a special time for women, and in a year that's certainly been a turbulent year, just ushering, I think the excitement I have felt from the community and friends far and near, just the excitement in Miami this week about the three of us and three women and three first. And I think it's an exciting time and we should all embrace it.
Here's Mayor Levine Cava reflecting on this historic week.
These firsts, you know, coming all within a week, I just do think that we're part of a new era of an awareness that women can do anything that a man can do, and we're proving it.
Both hope it's young women who draw inspiration from them, and these types of firsts become common.
I have been so, so delighted with the number of girls who have been aware and excited to welcome the first county woman mayor and these other roles, and many who've reached out to me and want to talk with me or take a photo, or, you know, many, many parents have asked me, please, would I take a moment with their daughters? And my own granddaughter, Lena, for her, 3 years old, this is a new normal for sure. She doesn't think anything of it.
It is an awesome responsibility, because when you're the first, everyone looks at you through a different lens, right? If you knock it out of the park, you open up pathways for so many young girls. And so I take that with an awesome responsibility. I'm humbled by it, but I'm not, you know, I just keep moving. I know that the first is just one moment. It's, you know, hitting the ground running and doing a great job.
Incoming Miami-Dade College President Madeline Pumariega and Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine Cava. Finally, on the roundup this week, the Miami Book Fair has been happening all week long, and those events and conversations with authors are online this year because of the pandemic. This year, there's also a Florida writer's map called Here in Florida. One of the points on that map is a spot in Miami Beach. It's a walk with author Judy Bloom and WLRN's Alicia Zuckerman. The author lived in Miami Beach for 2 years in the 1940s. She calls them the most important 2 years of her childhood. And that's what her book, starring Sally J. Friedman as herself, is all about. It was one of Alicia's favorite books as a kid. Several years ago, Alicia produced the Sally J. Friedman Reality Tour with Judy Bloom. And this year, it's on the book fair's Here in Florida Writer's Map. Take a listen.
I think it was in these 2 years that I spent in Miami Beach that I lost my shyness. I was a fearful child, anxious and fearful, I don't remember being that way here.
Even as she was getting less shy and less anxious, she still lived a lot of her life inside her head.
I played a lot with paper dolls because in my head I was making up stories. And someone came to my mother and said, she is too old to be playing with paper dolls.
Sally heard her say to Mom, when my Bubbles was that age, she was sewing her own clothes and reading fine literature from the library.
But I wasn't playing with paper dolls like a little kid. I was playing with paper dolls with all these really exciting melodramas going on inside my head. That's what made me a writer. Not writing stories down, but loving having the stories inside my head. You know, when I started to write, I had a place to put all that anxiety and fear, and I was fearless in my writing. And I don't know how that works, just two different parts of the brain.
There's more online. Judy Blume walking the streets of Miami Beach with WLRN's Alicia Zuckerman. It's part of the Miami Book Fair's Florida Writer's Map called Here in Florida. And that'll do it for the South Florida Roundup this week. It is produced by Denise Royal. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Lance Dixon is our digital editor. News director is Taryn Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. The director of radio programming here at WLRN is Jason Zabka. The director of radio operations and the program's technical supervisor is Peter J. Mertz. Richard Ives answers the phones. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling, listening, and supporting WLRN. And have a happy and safe Thanksgiving. The program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist.